Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. No flirting, no bait and switch. We're back now. The Raptor season is done. The Raptor show is done, at least other than maybe some one-offs around draft lottery and draft and things like that. Jays Talk Plus is back every day now with me, Blake Murphy, and Julia Kreutz. Julia, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. I'm very happy to be here. Very happy to officially get things started, make this a daily show at last. We've had a couple of episodes here and there. I did a podcast version of this before the season started, which was also pretty fun. But this is the real thing, Blake. We're finally here. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I'm really looking forward to it. I was watching a game with some friends last night, and the running, what we were watching for was, every year I start Jays Talk when Raptors end.
Yeah.
And there have been, so this is the fourth year of Jays Talk Plus, and the Jays have made, or the Raptors have made the playoffs once in there. They made the play-in once. There was one year where like the schedule was kind of delayed because we were still catching up from COVID years and stuff like that. And then there was also one of the years I was still doing drive time, so I didn't move over until the Leafs were done as well. So because of when Jays Talk Plus has started, I don't think the Jays have been in first place when I've done the show. And last night, they entered the game in first place. Of course, this morning, they are not in first place. My friends were having a good time with like, oh yeah, they're definitely losing tonight because you're back. They're obviously going to fall in the standings.
Yeah, can't have that. My fault. For sure. But, I've obviously done a ton of pre and post game shows during the weekend with Show Ali. And it is, you know, one thing that we never fail to talk about is just how murky this division is looking right now.
The whole American League, honestly, like no one looks like the Angels are supposed to be. I'm supposed to believe the Angels are good.
Yeah. Do you?
No, no. As a lifelong Joe Adell and Taylor Ward believer, like I'll believe that that they can hit a little bit. Mike Trout looks like Mike Trout, but no, it's that. And that tells you how early in the year it is too, that we're supposed to pretend the Angels are good, but the East is like very murky. Like the Yankees are a half game ahead of the Jays and they probably look like the best team, and they get Clark Schmidt back on Wednesday, which is a big deal for them. But everyone else in the East is just kind of, which is exactly how I feel about the Jays. 17 games in.
That is the case for the Jays for sure. There's, you know, you kind of see that there's obviously room for improvement, Blake, and maybe there is real room for, you know, the offense to produce a little bit more than it has. We have not seen any consistency there so far, especially when it comes to power, but I don't know. I do feel, and I will be the optimist here, which doesn't happen that often, but if a couple more guys in this lineup can just click for long enough and consistently enough to put up some runs on the board, I think the Jays could be in a pretty good place here with the way that the East is looking right now.
Yeah, the East looks vulnerable, and you know, who knows how the Central play out in terms of, hey, do they get a free wild card spot because the bottom of that division is so bad? But I think it's also, you know, if we're talking positivity, it's a 162-game schedule. It's long. If you can go through a couple weeks where your bats aren't going at all and you come out of those couple weeks above 500, you feel okay about that under, like, with the condition that, like, oh yeah, there will be better times.
Yeah.
There will be times the bats are going, like they're not going to be, shouldn't say they're not, they're probably not going to finish dead last in home runs.
Yeah.
They might. They are dead last right now.
You never know.
We'll talk about last night's game because there's a lot to sort through. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had his introductory presser yesterday. The Jays lost 8-4 to the Braves. Shine came off Easton Lucas a little bit. But I wanted to start with, I mentioned they're 9-8. When we did our opening day show, we looked at the schedule and they had 20 games in 21 days.
Yeah.
And it was, at least on paper, difficult competition. And we said, what would be a tolerable win-loss record? What would you be happy coming out of this with? And we said, we kind of agreed around 11-9.
Yeah.
Out of those 20 games. Now, one of them got rained out, so they can't finish 11-9. But they're 9-8. So, you know, they're either going to come out of this, you know, probably 10-9. Maybe you could get to 11-8. You know, obviously they get swept here. It's 9-10, easy math. But how do you, so checking in with that, where we set the bar initially, like, yeah, they should go 11-9 over this tough first 20 that's a little home heavy. They have a chance to still come out of this Braves series right on the kind of bar we set for them.
They do. And at the same time, the easiest game to do it with was last night. We know that Spencer Schwellenbach, the type of season, who goes today for the Braves, the type of season that he has put together so far, and I understand that it's pretty early, but he looks very unhittable. His ERA is under one right now. He has so many pitches in his repertoire, and he's commanding everything. And so, you know, no disrespect to Grant Holmes. He pitched a great game yesterday, but you look at the walk rate, you look at how much opponents had been putting the ball in the air against him. Last night felt like the game to do it, to kind of, you know, get the offense back on track if they were going to do that with the Braves. And, you know, the Jays had their chances, couldn't really come up with anything. There was a bit of bad luck involved as well, especially when you look at Vladdy's at-bats, but just didn't get anything going their way. Didn't have a base runner until the sixth, or didn't have a hit until the sixth. A base runner, I think it was a little bit before that. But yeah, not exactly how you would want to start the homestand right after Vladdy's presser. And then you have, obviously, Spencer Strider coming back on Wednesday, and he looked really, really good. 15 strikeouts, I believe, in his last rehab outing. These are tough games.
There have been 16 players in Major League Baseball history with the first name Spencer. To have two of them in a row in a rotation is really, really amusing to me. But yeah, these are really good pitchers. Like Spencer Schwellenbach had, even if you're not fully buying the half run ERA so far, he had like a 3.35 last year as a rookie.
Yeah.
And like does not walk anyone.
Yeah, the like, command is unbelievable.
Yeah, 95th percentile walk rate last year, 96th percentile chase rate. So it's like, if I throw it outside the zone, you're going to swing at it anyway because my stuff's so tricky and I throw six pitches and he throws hard. He's not like normally when it's like these six pitch hyper location guys, yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you have to do that because you throw 91 or 92. Like Chris Bassett can't get the 96 all that often anymore. Yeah. And then Schwellenbach's like, oh, also my fastball is 96.
I was going to say he's Chris Bassett with 96 in the tank, which is really tough for opposing hitters. And, you know, you kind of look at pitch sequencing and the pitch mix and what he's doing right now against both lefties and righties. You can never really guess what's coming, Blake, and that is what makes things way more difficult as well. If there was any level of predictability to what Schwellenbach is going to throw next, great, but there isn't. And that is, I think, something that also kind of reminds me of Bassett beyond just, you know, the wide array of repertoire here is the fact that he's mixing his pitches, Schwellenbach, is extremely well, and that is a big part of his success right now.
Yeah, and so it'll be tough. Tough hitting tonight. It'll be tough hitting tomorrow. Yep. We'll set you up for tonight's game as we're on the way out. Keegan Mathison is going to join us in the second segment as well, by the way, although he did add the caveat, only if our first 20 minutes here is good.
Hey, so far so good.
No
we're
pressure.
8 minutes in.
Yeah. Okay, so let's touch on, so you mentioned Grant Holmes was, in theory, an easier pitcher to get to. I broke him down on Blue Jay Central last night, and he's fascinating because Dylan Cease is the only full-time starter in baseball who throws more breaking balls than Grant Holmes. And then he came out and six of the first seven batters, he threw first pitch fastball to, which is like very unconventional for him. And the Jays were like he was at like 41 pitches through 3 2/3 innings or something like that. Like he was so pitch efficient. The Jays were obviously geared up to jump on him. They didn't swing and miss very much at all. Mm-hmm. They just like a lot of soft contact, a lot of foul balls, you know, none of the pitch design metrics weren't like, oh, Grant Holmes was unbelievable. He was fine, yeah. But not a ton of swing and miss. What did you think of that approach from the Blue Jays being so aggressive early in counts against a guy like that?
Yeah, interesting because I don't think we necessarily have seen a ton of that from the Jays. You know, aside from Mo Bichette, I should say, who's always going to be an aggressive hitter, and that is where he's at his best, but you know, you game plan for a guy expecting one thing. Holmes did mention post game yesterday, you know, as he was throwing his pregame bullpen, he noticed that the cutter was, you know, was there at last, something that maybe had eluded him so far this season. And so that is just what he and Sean Murphy went to a little bit more, especially to left-handed batters in the Blue Jays lineup. And it worked out. I mean, that's what makes a pitcher good, right? It's that ability to keep the hitters guessing and foil, let's say, some of the game planning that existed. I didn't mind, you know, necessarily how the Blue Jays came out. Again, I do believe that they ran into some bad luck. Vladdy just missed a home run. Tyler Heidemann just missed a home run. And then Vladdy had another line out that, you know, would have been a hit.
Yeah, his two that he stung had expected batting averages of 630 and 770. And I don't love that stat generally, but like as a, hey, does that usually drop in? Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And so, you know, you can see that the at-bats were not necessarily all bad. There is stuff to like there. And I think that that is the case, not just for Vladdy, but for the Blue Jays lineup as a whole right now. We do see a little bit more consistency in the at-bats. And there is a case to be made about maybe things turning around relatively soon when you see how hard they're hitting the ball. Good swing decisions just didn't go their way, Blake. And it's, you know, not a lot has gone right for the Braves early on in the season. Last night, a whole lot went right for them.
Yeah, the bats were certainly going for the Braves. And this is, yeah, Braves team that started the season 0-7 and has, you know, dragged themselves to 5-11. Now, it's not where they want to be, but when you're navigating Ronald Acuna is still not back, you haven't had Spencer Strider, Joe Jimenez in the bullpen, you lose Jerkson Profar for 81 games, you know, and now like Marcell Ozuna, who's been their hottest hitter, is not playing in this series because of a hip thing. You start to look at, oh, Reynaldo Lopez is not in the rotation as well. You start to look at, well, yeah, you're underneath it a little bit. There's a lot of time to climb back. But we talked about how wide open the AL and the AL East feel. That is not going to be the case in the NL.
Yep.
Like the West is probably taking two wild card spots, and you got to try to catch up with the Phillies and Mets if you dig yourself a hole. Like the Braves, and you were in that room after the game, I'm sure are feeling a sense of urgency even this early.
They are, for sure. But you listen to Brian Snitker talk, it's pretty unbelievable just how cool, calm, and collected he is when talking about the, you know, the bad start. And the Braves have shown flashes, I guess, over the past week. Nothing really that they were able to build on, but Snitker maintains that it's coming. The turnaround is coming, and that is because of what they are seeing in the batter's box. And, you know, you look at a guy like Austin Riley, who categorized himself as embarrassing. That is a direct quote.
Wow.
After the Dodgers series, in which obviously they lost both games there. And now he's looking like himself again. And that is because his approach is, and again, this is from post-game yesterday, well, with runners on and fewer than two outs, I'm going to put the ball in the air. Not necessarily, you know, working hard for the power and for the pop, not trying to you know, swing out of his shoes or anything like that, but just understanding that this is what he is there to do. And I think the frustrating part about the Blue Jays so far this season is that with runners on, it almost feels like they are unwilling to put the ball in the air with fewer than two outs. And that ends up in a lot of double plays and one run innings that could have been a four run inning, like what the Braves did in the fifth yesterday. I don't know. I saw a few similarities there, Blake, between the Braves offense and the Blue Jays offense to start the season. But one of those teams turned it around yesterday.
Yeah. And I mean, Austin Riley was definitely the bellwether for that. So he had the really hard hit ground out to start the game. Good at bat for Easton Lucas, like got ahead 1-2 and then threw a slider that just caught the bottom of the zone, and Riley hammered it, but right at to Bo Bichette. But then Riley's next two at bats, he got a 93 mile an hour fastball that was like middle high. Like, I don't care how badly Austin Riley is slumping, he's going to jump on that. And then he got the one that he hit 444 feet was a slider that just hung. It didn't get low enough or inside enough. So Easton Lucas mistakes there. But Austin Riley had the three hardest hit balls of the game between those three. He was pretty locked in. And then Sean Murphy obviously hit one out as well, an 0-1 changeup that was just way too much plate, similar to the fastball to Riley. So when it comes to Easton Lucas' side of this game, obviously good for the Braves on their side to get the bats going and be aggressive like that, try to get the ball in the air. Lucas obviously made those couple mistake pitches for those home runs, really struggled with his command overall.
Yeah.
What did you see from Lucas? And like, there's some interesting stuff going on with Lucas where, like, I think he's throwing two different fastballs. The Statcast and things like that are like in disagreement on if he's throwing a cutter or not.
Right.
We asked Tyler Heineman about it before the game, and he was like, no, it's just fastball, slider, sweeper at this point. But like, some of them are like, the velocity's less and they're cutting. So I don't know. Huh. It looks like a cut fastball. But either way, the location, he walked a handful of guys.
Yes.
And then, you know, a good indicator when your command is off is not just the walks. It's when you hit the strike zone, like those two to Riley, like the one to Murphy. It's a lot of strike zone.
Yeah, there's different ways to miss, right, Blake? And I think that the way that Lucas missed yesterday was just the worst of both worlds, which is the walks and then the home runs. And that's something that we hadn't seen at all, obviously, from him in his first two starts. It felt a little bit, and this is kind of a silly thing to say, honestly, but it felt a little bit like, you know, when cartoon characters run past a cliff and it's only when they look down that they realize that they're falling. It felt like he looked down.
Okay.
It felt like he like it was just, you know, he was rolling and there was reason to believe that this was for real. Obviously, he was not going to hold a zero ERA for the entire season, but there was real reason to believe that it was for real, that this is just, you know, he is a good starter. And then just so many mistakes. Yeah, the three home runs there, there's no other way to put it. They were just mistake pitches. Mm-hmm. And both of Riley's homers came on the first pitch, which really tells you that he was hunting for those errors there.
Yeah. I like that in this case, in your analogy where he is Wile E. Coyote and has run off the cliff and is in the air, Austin Riley is in the role of the roadrunner where he's just on the cliff and just like points down for him to look and he looks, okay, so Easton Lucas, yeah, not the best game there. So fastball, the result, I know he grooved the one to Riley there, but overall, the results of the fastball were okay, but the changeup, the slider, and the sweeper, one swing and miss over 41 pitches. You know, the fastball is just not, short of being Justin Steele, who throws like four different fastballs at 92 from the left side, you're not going to be able to live with a 93, 94 mile an hour fastball when none of your secondary stuff is fooling anyone. Did seem like the Braves had a good read on him. I know there were pregame quotes from Brian Snicker about Easton Lucas heading in. They had obviously done their scout. What had Snicker read on Lucas going in?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to hear that from Snicker, in which, you know, basically what I asked was, are there added challenges to game plan for a guy none of your hitters have seen? And he said, yeah, you can watch all the video in the world. There is no substitute to actually just standing in that box and feeling the guy out. But Snicker was one to say, listen, I watched video on Lucas. There's a lot to like there. This seems legit. And so, you know, obviously it was a good experience for Braves hitters to get in that box and feel out Lucas. It worked out in their favor. But I, you know, when you have an actually good and defined approach at the plate, it really, you know, it matters less, I guess, that you're unfamiliar with a pitcher. And that is kind of what we saw yesterday. I don't know, Blake. You compared these two offenses right now and what it is that they're able to do. Tough look.
I always wonder, too, like, and, you know, this is why we ask the managers and the players pregame and stuff like that. I always wonder, too, is like, yes, there is a challenge to facing a guy you've never seen before, but I wonder if it also simplifies the game plan.
For sure.
It's like, hey, go out there and look for this. Mm-hmm. We don't, you know, you haven't seen him enough to be able to pick up every, hey, is this spin? Is this off speed? Yeah. Is this fastball? Pick a thing. Go up there and look for it, and then you kind of simplify that way. And honestly, the Jays' results didn't work out that way, but it did seem like they were doing that with Grant Holmes, hence all the early, hey, if we get a fastball early in the count, we got to jump on it. He doesn't throw many of those. I wonder if that's an element of it. Let's just simplify. We haven't seen this guy before.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we have spoken a lot since last season about just how much information Blue Jays hitters are getting and how that information is digested and how, you know, game planning kind of goes about. Maybe it is time to simplify things, Joe, or Blake. Sorry, I've been doing this with Joe a lot, you know? It's going to happen a little bit here and there. I'm going to call Joe Blake. That's called Dan Shulman Ben the other day, you know?
There you go. Don't worry about it. We keep moving. The whole Shulman family is great. You can do with that whatever with
that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's hit a couple quick positives before you take a break and talk to Keegan Mathieson. The big positive from this one, honestly, Miles Straw is, look, it is not a positive that Miles Straw and Tyler Heineman are the team's best hitters so far, statistically. Great, though, that Miles Straw has, with almost no expectations coming into this, like, obviously, it's not his fault that he is the contract they took back to get international pool money to take a run at Roky Sasaki, but that's what he is going to signify to Jays fans. He has really stepped in defensively and with like unexpected, some timely hits and plays while Dalton Varsho was out.
Yeah, he's pretty much everything you can ask for from a bench player, right? Mm-hmm. He is an overpaid bench player for sure, but
not his fault.
Man, yeah, not his fault at all. And we know that, you know, with what the Blue Jays are trying to do, every single player on that roster is going to matter. You have 26 spots, and you need contributions from every one of them for a postseason hopeful team. And Straw has given them pretty much everything that they have asked for. It's been really, really impressive to see. And I will say that homer was impressive too.
Yeah, that wasn't a cheapie.
It was not a cheapie. And this is, frankly, a continuation. We've seen Straw swing the bat extremely well this season. I would put it up there, Blake, with one of the biggest surprises of the season so far.
Straw hitting just his second home run since 2021 and Tyler Heineman hitting his first since 2019. Weird contributions from weird places. I think, look, Heineman's got the backup catcher job pretty a good handle on it. But if you're Miles Straw, you and Nathan Lucas are probably competing to see who stays on the roster for when Dalton Varsho is back, which is not that far away. Little update on Varsho, by the way. He played an extended spring training game yesterday, and he had the green light to throw, but didn't have any plays where he needed to throw other than, like, just get the ball back into the infield. He is expected to start a rehab assignment with Single-A Dunedin after his wife gives birth this week.
Yeah.
Him and Nathan Lucas are both expecting this week. So the Jays potentially going to need to call someone up from AAA for Nathan Lucas's PAT leave. But yeah, Varsho, his wife is due Wednesday, I believe. Then when that's done, he'll go on a rehab assignment to Dunedin. He'll obviously then go to Buffalo to ramp up, and then he'll be back. So not that far away for Dalton Varsho if all goes well.
No, and the Blue Jays kind of need it, especially if he can continue any of the success that he had in the spring. Obviously limited to DH. We know that his value is in the outfield, is at center field every single day. We understand that, but the ability to pull the ball and to drive the ball and to maybe, you know, get it out of the park a few more times than what we've seen is also going to be big for the Blue Jays. Streaky hitter,
yeah,
you know,
but
obviously
they could use someone on a heater right now.
They could use a good
home run.
Yeah, and again, you look at Santander's at-bats, you look at Vladdy's at-bats right now, they are trending in the right direction. And if you can get those secondary contributions until these guys get there and, you know, keep your head above water, stay above 500, I think you're pretty happy with it, especially, Blake, again, we mentioned how difficult the schedule was early on. Yeah, I don't want to sound overly positive. That's not what I'm trying to do here. But and Varsho could come right into that and help in that way too.
Yeah, and also, if anyone missed the injury update yesterday, it seems like they avoided disaster with George Springer too. I would have guessed from those swings on Sunday that he was going to miss some time. He's day-to-day. He's not too bad at all. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Keegan Mathison, who, I don't know if you know this, Julia, has a book coming out.
Do I ever?
And when he is, I imagine when you're writing a book about the entire history of a franchise, you are pretty capable of contextualizing what a day like yesterday was like. No, the game didn't go well. Yes, Vlad went 0-for, but the Vlad introductory press conference, the whole organization being there, John Schneider in a suit.
Yep.
You know it's a big day if John Schneider dusts off the suit. Let's see what Keegan thought about that day. We'll kick around. Hey, what happens if Easton Lucas continues to struggle? Hey, who's coming up for Nathan Lucas if he needs a Pat Lee fill-in? We'll kick around all that stuff with Keegan Mathison next as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Fun one. Fun day. Less fun game, but it's always, I mean, they're always fun. But yeah, Jays lose 8-4. Prior to all of that, though, at 1 p.m. yesterday, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was a part of a press conference with Edward Rogers and Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. And John Schneider didn't speak, right? He was just there?
No, he was just there in a suit. Yeah.
A lot of family there, a lot of teammates out to support Vlad as well. Let's contextualize some of that with Keegan Mathison of MLB.com and author of the franchise Toronto Blue Jays, out June 3rd. Forward by John Gibbons. Pre-order wherever you get your books now. Keegan, good morning, buddy.
What a graphic. I love it. I'm happy to be here, y'all. It's very rare that I get to talk to two people at the same time who I like. So this is an important moment of growth for me. I'm happy to be here. Happy the show is back for another season.
Me too. Happy Julia's here for this season as well. And happy that the move that you made last season resulted in this unbelievable backdrop. That is hell of a bookshelf. Sorry for anyone listening on audio only, but this is a new Keegan Matheson setup for 2025, and it looks terrific.
You got to keep them fooled. For our friends listening on the radio or on podcast, not only do I look good, I look smart. So trust me on that. But you got to keep them fooled. I promise it's not a painting. I see some people go with those backdrops you can pull down from the sky. But no, it's good to be here. I moved right at the end of last season, like a day after the season. So I have not yet had the chance to benefit from my proximity to the ballpark until now. Probably not healthy to be closer, but it's a good life.
This is how you know, I'll call it pragmatic pessimism. Scheduling a move for what would otherwise be a wild card spot is that's bold, but it was proven correct. Hopefully you don't have any plans for like that first weekend in October this coming year. That's
not yet. It's always weddings around this age. I mean, where I'm from in Nova Scotia, everyone's been married for 10 years, but in the city, you get married a little later, I guess. So I'm going through my city friends' wedding years now, and it's always that question. Hey, man, October 14th, we're getting married. And that's the true test of how I feel about the Blue Jays team that year. So this year, I'm not RSVPing to anything. How about that?
That's well said. Yeah, this year, it's hey, can you make this October 14th wedding? I don't know. Ask Vlad. Maybe. Vlad if I can make it.
Not up to me.
Yeah, let's use that to pivot to Vlad. So yesterday there was the intro press conference. And look, we've all talked about that. We did an emergency show when the signing happened. We've all contextualized $500 million at this point. However, you do have that book coming out on June 3rd, The Franchise Toronto Blue Jays. And you have spent the last year plus writing about and contextualizing the entire history of this franchise. So through that lens, how meaningful a day was yesterday locking up a homegrown player for conceivably his entire career?
Yeah, Blake, my mind went back to when I was writing the chapter actually about Shohei Ohtani and trying to frame what that moment would have meant. And I think Vladdy is pretty close that behind the World Series wins and behind some personal favorites that everyone will have, depending on your era of Blue Jays baseball, whether that's those great 80s teams, whether that is the 15 and 16 teams, Bautista's moment, it's up there. It has to be, because this is one of the biggest news moments in Major League Baseball. This guy just made $500 million. Like, you cannot overstate how large this is. And I think how this played out, guys, almost took the edge off of it, because this was day 90 of it's about to happen. It's about to happen. It's already happened. There was a level of exhaustion, I think, among people, which brought from that a level of relief as much as celebration. So this is just a huge moment for sports in Canada, let alone the Blue Jays. And man, Blake, going back to the book, I was so scared all along that I would have my Tim McMahon moment with Luka Doncic. Now, for our friends listening who are not as into the NBA, Tim McMahon, an ESPN NBA reporter, wrote a book about Luka Doncic. And last month, Luka gets traded to the Lakers. I had worried about that moment and lost sleep over that. But thankfully, everything works out. Everybody's happy. And man, what a moment yesterday, half billion, looking back at who Vladdy has been for this organization, looking back at his prospect years, which I think we should forever carve out and hold as their own thing. Man, what a moment, and it changes the whole future of this team, period.
Keegs, you and I were obviously sitting together at the press conference yesterday and kind of just looking around before it started and in awe of the pomp and circumstance, really, right? There was a lot that went into that. And, you know, we were kind of speculating a little bit beforehand, is Edward Rogers going to show up or not? And obviously he did, spoke very highly of Vlad. How big is that actually? You know, what importance does that carry that you have Edward Rogers there speaking so highly of Vladdy?
Yeah, he does not show up for nothing. That was rare. That was very rare. I've covered this team since 2017, and that hasn't happened very much. You don't see him around. And we were trying to figure out, as the podium was set, because there were three bottles of what I'll call normal water, but then there was one bottle that was a little fancier. At first, I thought that might be Vladdy. Maybe he's a sparkling guy. I don't know. But then in came Edward Rogers, the chairman of the Toronto Blue Jays, from Rogers' ownership. And that was a big moment. To hear him speak on this team was important. And honestly, if there's ever a time to be out in front of the cameras, why the hell not then? You have just locked up a star player that people love. beyond the baseball of it all, beyond projections and exit velocities, yada, 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 people love Vladdy. The people who show up, buy tickets, buy a beer, buy a jersey, your mom, your aunt, your buddy who watches a couple games a week, they love Vladdy. And at the end of the day, this is entertainment. This is an entertainment business. People are going to care, and they're going to give a damn because of Vladdy. Now, ideally, they're caring about him on a World Series team, and this is not another Delgado Holiday late 90s, early 2000s situation. We'll see, but that was something we were kind of talking about walking down. Like, will he or won't he be here? And, yeah, the nicer water bottle belonged to him.
Something else that stood out with just hearing him speak is that he did bring up bringing a World Series back to Toronto multiple times. He did, you know, pretty much commit to putting a winning team on the field for years to come. How important is it to hear that from a Rogers?
Yeah, that's what's so exciting about the Vladdy signing big picture, is because the conversations we were having 2 weeks ago was a lot of, hey, there's an off-ramp here. If they don't sign Vladdy, they don't sign Bo. The Blue Jays could choose to crank this back and do a bit of a rebuild, retool, re-whatever you want to call it. Now, they're going to keep spending. And if you are a Blue Jays fan, you have been waiting and waiting and waiting for Toronto to start acting like a big city. It is. It's not a small town. They are a major, major market in Major League Baseball. And like Edward Rogers said, it's 41 million fans. You've got a national market. That's what? The size of California. It's a huge market that other teams dream of. Now they're going to keep spending like that. Once you sign Vladdy for 500 mil, you don't try to moneyball your way around him. It's not going to work like that. So that means that once Chris Bassitt and Gausman and Scherzer and Berríos eventually leave, there's going to be another version and another version. They're going to keep spending. That's where this gets exciting. And that's where the conversation comes back to winning. Mark Shapiro's been heavy on that a few times, where he said, listen, there's one guy, and it was Shohei Ohtani, obviously, where there's a case for something outside of baseball, where you get into the business case and what else can be brought in. For anyone else, it's about winning. And I always go back to, like we said, those Delgado Holiday examples. You can have great, truly elite Hall of Fame caliber players. You got to win. Man, everything's cooler when you win. Everyone will pack in when you win. We saw that in 15 and 16. They've just got to capture that again.
Yeah, I mean, we even saw it in 21, right, when they didn't quite make it, but that run when they were back home and making the push and everything like that, we were finally allowed to go outside and stuff like that. Yeah, the people show up, and it's interesting, like obviously we work for Rogers here, so they're, you know, it's awkward to talk about this stuff through some lens, but like, the Jays have been a top eight payroll for a couple of seasons now. They're a top five payroll this year. The issues have been how the money gets spent and how that leads to wins rather than the actual commitment to trying to bring a winner here. Because, yeah, the secret thing is like, yeah, costs are one thing, but playoff revenues are huge. I covered the 2019 Raptors when they won the championship. That was like a five-year license to print money for like merch and hey, we're going to raise the banner tonight. Hey, this guy's back. And then you're going to get into like, oh, there's the 10-year anniversary of this and things like that. Winning does a lot for your bottom line as well. Okay, so that's the business side of this. That's the big picture side. I think we can move forward now on the contract. Vlad has not looked bad at the plate. The underlying stuff is good. The at-bats have mostly been fine to good. 26 games without a home run, though. The second longest streak of his career so far. Look, it's going to happen. We went through this last year. We went through it the year before that. These things happen. But as a kind of avatar for what this team hasn't been able to do yet offensively, they are dead last with only 9 home runs. They've been out-homered 21-9 on the year. How much are you watching for Vlad's first home run and some of this okay process stuff to turn around a little earlier than it did last year, where I think it was like second week of May last year when things kind of picked up for Vlad?
Yeah, it's got to happen because I understand the value of good process and good at-bats. I also don't really care about them because I cover games where the score counts and where the wins count and you tally them all up at the end of the year. So while I do believe that it's definitely coming for Vladdy, and I understand why John Schneider says that, he's right to, frankly, but you need to see it. It's a right now business. And Vladdy does look very close. You see that in terms of the hard contact he's making to right center field. seems like everything is being shot that way intentionally, almost. And every hitter has their tell. For Bo Bichette, it is those line drives right down the first base, right field line. When he's doing that, you know that something is right. You know he's about to really get into one. Vladdy is just a bit off. That's why it's going just right of center. But when he turns on one, it's going to go to the moon. And I think it's going to happen soon. And we've seen with Vladdy that when that happens and when he starts to steamroll forward, it all comes. And it comes very quickly for him. With Vladdy, his whole career, back to when he was 17, 18 years old, he's more of a hitter that you need to feel out rather than a hitter you need to measure. And I'd imagine, I can't exactly speak to this, guys, but having a contract negotiation this large, it's got to wear on you a little bit. I don't care what you say. I don't care how long you've been around baseball. This is $500 million. It's on your mind. I don't care how good you can compartmentalize. So I think that Vladdy's going to be freed up. And a free and easy and fun-loving Vladdy, who's out there playing this game like he's 8 years old again, is the best version of him, period. There's nothing close. So I think this will come together pretty quickly. When it does, it'll be loud. It'll be constant. But they need it, man. This is a few years in of me saying they need to hit home runs. And I know it's not the most advanced analytical argument in the world, but my goodness, they need to hit home runs.
And my goodness, you make that argument well. Obviously, this is not just Vlad, right? Keegs, obviously, he is going to be the main guy in this offense for 14 more years, but there are guys around him that haven't necessarily picked it up either. Santander did drive one out of the park at Camden Yards. That was really good to see. That was a cool moment. But where are the home runs going to come from outside of that 1-2-3 pocket there? Could it be a streaky Dalton Varsho coming back, or can we just rely on Miles Straw and Tyler Heineman to provide the power for the rest of the season? What do you see in terms of just how the rest of this lineup is going to shake down?
Yeah, there's a balance to that, because while you do look at this and say, okay, Vladdy and Bo are going to start hitting some bombs, is Tyler Heineman, Miles Straw, are they going to keep doing that? I don't know. So you need this to come pretty quickly, and you need it to come from multiple areas. Now, George Springer has been a big help in that regard. Andrés Giménez is not always going to look like he did in week one. That's all right. But the Blue Jays need more from Alejandro Kirk, number one. He looked fantastic in spring training. Like, down in Dunedin, everything was hit hard. He looked like he did a couple of years ago, which was really exciting. We haven't seen much of that, so you need more. And then the Blue Jays need a couple of these complimentary bats at the bottom of the lineup, whether that's guys on this roster right now or guys who are going to be soon if it doesn't happen. That starts with David Schneider. He needs to crush some lefties. He needs to hit a couple of home runs. That's why he's on this roster. If not, then it looks to Addison Barger. It looks to Aurelvis Martinez down the list. And Dalton Varsho coming back will be big. I know DH Varsho in spring training was a bit of a unique monster, but he got into some. He has the power to hit 25 a season if he's playing a full 162. That'll help. But they need a little bit from everybody if it's not going to be a 40-homer season from Vladdy. They cannot be in the bottom of the league. That's not going to work, period. It's just not going to. Right now, I think close to half the teams in baseball have twice as many home runs as the Blue Jays. So this will not be representative of who they are. They won't finish last in power this season. But it does need to change quickly, because I know I'm always a little too early on the urgency thing, but I'm also a believer that these games count. So it's clock's ticking, always.
Yeah, and they do count, and honestly, maybe less so after the Vlad extension, because like you laid out, the future competitive, the medium-term competitive window is very obvious now. But if you all 162 count the same, but when you have to make some big decisions at the trade deadline with certain expiring contracts and things like that, the games early on, like, they kind of matter a little bit more just in terms of dictating your direction and how aggressive you're going to be in July. How, hey, do you jump early on one extra bullpen arm like they did a couple seasons ago, or things like that. So also, like, while every other team in the AL East is like, yeah, we're just okay, not a bad idea to stack wins. To our point earlier, Julie, about how weak the AL's been, our pal Jonah Bierenbaum of The Score texted me that there are only three, the Jays are fourth in the American League in run differential, and they've been outscored.
Yeah.
Gross.
It's pretty bad. You look at the Yankees are outscoring their opponents. They're going to continue to do that, double digits for the rest of the season most likely. But then other than that, what?
Yeah.
Who?
the Angels, apparently, again, which 30 home runs. The Angels have 30 home runs and the Blue Jays have 9. That's that is I don't think it's going to be a good Los Angeles Angels team, but that's a pretty big gap so early on here. Vlad comes around a little bit. Anthony Santander comes around a little bit. Dalton Varsho added back in. That stuff will all help. Keegan, have you mentioned Aurelvis there. I would warn anyone, don't go look at the stats in AAA so far. But I'm mentioning AAA just because we heard yesterday it's possible Nathan Lucas will hit the PAT list, paternity leave, at some point this week. Do you have a lean on who you'd like to, I know it's only like 2-3 days, but who you'd like to see from that Bison squad up to get a swing there?
This is still a strange one for me. We have this conversation a lot when we're talking about the bottom of the lineup. Mm-hmm. Well, who's next? Because this is more about position, I think, than real immediate upside. Addison Barger, I think, earned that with his spring training. The numbers are not exactly there in Buffalo just yet, but they're playing in Buffalo. It's early April. I don't take it too seriously. Addison Barger had a fantastic spring. That should put him in line, I believe. But you also have the infield group. You have Loperfido if you want another guy who can cover some center and play the corners. But the Blue Jays are already pretty crowded in the outfield, more crowded than they need to be, frankly, at this point. Whoever they do call up, if it's for a couple of days, it could kind of be the Nathan Lucas situation from a couple of years ago, where they're here to hang out, maybe not so much play baseball. But this is going to shake up even more when Varsho returns, guys, which will be maybe next week, seeing how this rehab stint goes starting in Dunedin. Then I think you're going to see maybe two outfielders moved out, and that could be when it gets more interesting for Addison Barger. I think someone like that who can add some level of pop. Barger and Martinez as well, when you look at them, is it going to be the most consistent pop in the world? No. But you've got to chase some upside at this point, I think, if you're the Blue Jays, and find some upside in the bottom of your lineup. I like what they've been doing, trying to mix and match, find some platoon advantages. I like that John Schneider's been more aggressive with that, but you need the players to execute on that when you do put them in those spots.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And you mentioned Barger. I'm with you. Like on merit, the spring training, like Jonathan Clase has had the best season with the Bison so far, the best week and a half with the Bison so far. Feels unfair to call it a season. And another guy who could spot in center. But then you get into your point with Lucas. Like, yeah, if you're coming up to sit on the bench, maybe don't use a young guy that you want getting everyday reps. Yeah. It's interesting you say that about Barger when Varsho's back, because I had made the point earlier, you know, Miles Straw playing pretty well. Maybe that makes a case for him to stick and Nathan Lucas goes down. But we had kicked around in the preseason. Yeah, maybe they both go down because Varsho's such an everyday piece. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, I think when Varsho was back, it's every day.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to ease him in too much. Yeah, sure, maybe you give him a day off after a night game, kind of. But at that point, I really do think that impacts two outfield roster spots. And right now, Miles Straw, I mean, full credit to that dude. He has come in and completely changed how a lot of people around the league think about him at this stage in his career. Credit to him. And I think that he has earned and deserves a longer look on this team. Now, it's all about how it fits in behind Varsho. When would he actually be used? We'll see. But you also get to the argument about Nathan Lucas. And then if by next week, Davis Schneider is still not putting up numbers at the plate, that's another conversation to have right there. The Blue Jays could use someone on this roster who has a little more infield to their arsenal than outfield at that point, I think. And you've got to chase some offensive upside. So I think Barger has to be right there in that conversation. And it's always been kind of building to the Varsho return. This is an odd roster makeup. Not a bad one, but an odd one, an unlikely one coming out of camp. So I think this changes it quite a bit, because Varsho's going to be out there 95% of the games the rest of the way.
Yeah, even the infield thing's so interesting, because you see things like, wait, Joey Loperfido played a couple innings at second base. Wait, Addison Barger's getting starts at shortstop still? What's going on here? Like, those are obviously not things you would want to do at the major league level, but you look at the AAA roster too, and it's also pretty outfield heavy. So they got to, you know, they got to find an infield. Like you said, Davis Schneider coming around would be the easiest one of these. Yeah. Especially given how lefty heavy the bottom of the lineup is there. Last one for you before we let you go, Keegan. Easton Lucas had a rough one last night, coming off of two really good ones. This just kind of the ups and downs we're going to expect from a guy who's supposed to be in AAA right now.
Yeah, this is what happens when you don't locate perfectly. And after the game, you know, asked John Schneider about that. And then, frankly, let's call myself out. I asked a dumb follow-up question asking if Lucas would stay in the rotation going forward. And that was worded harder than it should have been. But, of course, he should stay, and he looked fantastic in those first two. But it was more just a curiosity about what other options the Blue Jays have at this point. And the answer is not many. So Lucas is going to get some more run. He was great in his first outing, great in his second outing. Now you get punched back because all of a sudden the other team is saying, God, this guy's gone back-to-back shutout starts. Let's not be made to look foolish by this AAA starter. People start to watch tape on you. They start to say, oh, that's the pitch. That's the location we are going to sit on. And he did get hammered. So this is when he and Pete Walker, I'm sure, are already at the stadium, hunched over an iPad somewhere, trying to figure this out. But he has earned, you know, the opportunity to come back for a couple more of these. And the Jays are going to need him to, because I don't know when Max Scherzer is going to pitch again at this point. If he's visiting another doctor and there's at least a full ramp-up rehab for him, we're talking still weeks and weeks at this point, best case scenario. So not only do they need Lucas for another start, they need him probably for two, three, four more at the very least. And this is part of it. It was not going to last forever. Now it's his job to counter the counter.
Yeah, I'd say the ideal is somewhere in between, right? Or the expectation is somewhere in between. Two very, very good starts. And then yesterday, but can't really expect him to sustain what he did early on. I don't think anyone expected him to be as good as he was right off the gate.
Yeah, even the five innings, though, is like that as a bar is okay. You don't have to do a bullpen day the every fifth day. You know, Jake Bloss was who I think heading into spring we all thought would be the next man up. He's still struggling with his control through a couple ice cold start, like weather-wise, they were very cold starts. So maybe not the best situation to pitch in. But yeah, it's Lucas until it's not for right now. Keegan, thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
You got it, my friends. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
Keegan Matheson, MLB.com, the franchise, Toronto Blue Jays, out June 3rd and available for pre-order now. We got another game tonight. It's Jackie Robinson Day, which is an interesting time to have Jackie Robinson Day.
Sure is.
There are a couple of, there's a good piece up at sportsnet.ca talking to a couple of the Black American players in the Blue Jays system about the importance of this day and Jackie Robinson's legacy. I recommend also Michael Lee at the Washington Post had a really good piece on contextualizing Jackie Robinson Day in the current political moment and at a time when even MLB themselves are scrubbing a lot of parts of Jackie Robinson's history as they talk about Jackie Robinson Day this year. So we don't have time to get into all that today, but go check the Michael Lee piece out at the Washington Post. It's really, really good, really helpful to sit with on a day like this, because if you're not going to reflect on Jackie Robinson's importance and, you know, how it reflects the current baseball environment
now
on Jackie Robinson Day, what are we doing Jackie Robinson Day for? Julia, Jackie Robinson Day, we'll also see Spencer Schwellenbach against Kevin Gausman. The Braves got the bats going a little bit yesterday. They still won't have Marcell Ozuna. What are you looking for from, and we only got a minute and a half left here, but Gausman went from a zero strikeout game to a 10 strikeout game, and most of his swing and miss stuff this year has been on the fastball, not on the splitter. What are you looking for from him today?
He has to get the splitter back to a swing and miss situation. He has to, because obviously, you know, he got by on the fastball and he did phenomenally because he was locating very, very well against the Red Sox. And with Gausman, a hitter can never really not have the splitter in the back of his mind. And we kind of saw some ugly swings from the Red Sox, you know, swinging under fastballs that were below the zone and things along those lines. Now the book is out. Now, you know, the Braves very much know that he's more fastball heavy, or he's been more fastball heavy recently. So the splitter needs to get back to a swing and miss spot for him. That is his pitch, right?
Yeah, it has to be. And yeah, you can get 10 strikeouts on the fastball some games, but it's not, you know, you throw 94. You're not going to, even with the deception and having to play off the splitter, you're not going to get enough swing and miss if that's your only swing and miss pitch. Spencer Schwellenbach will get a lot of swing and miss, and he won't walk anyone. Throws 96, throws six pitches. Good luck, Blue Jay. They are 6-17 against him as a team. So who knows? Maybe they can figure it out. That one's at 7:07 on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Dan, Joe, and Hazel on the call for you. Jamie and Madison on Blue Jays Central. Ben, Chris, and Sho have the radio call for you. If you want more Blue Jays, Jeff Blair coming up 2-4, and we will be back tomorrow to break this one down. Thank you to Keegan Matheson for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mon, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick. Behind the Glass. Julia, great first show.
I know.
Really enjoyed it.
This was the best. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, see you tomorrow. I'll see you down at the ballpark a little bit later. I hope you guys all have a wonderful Tuesday. We'll be back to break down Spencer Schwellenbach against Kevin Gausman. Set you up for Spencer Strider's return tomorrow, too.